And this is WHCC in Holland. It's time now for Talk of the Town, the program in which you, the listeners, participate with your telephone calls. Our Talk of the Town number here is 395-1450. And our guest this morning is Attorney Nathan Bach. Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning, Juke.
And Nathan has an office at Central Park, and I guess if you need a problem, if you have a legal problem, you can go and see him there, but you can call right here, too.
Exactly. I give you a free half an hour of free advice, and I'm there down in Central Park all the time. It's a beautiful neighborhood to be in,
yeah.
And we even have stuff online, so they can go to centralparklaw.com, or excuse me, centralparklaw.pro if they want to check out the online stuff. We've got that there as well. So we're trying to, as people get more and more computer savvy, they're starting to want to do more things online. We even do appointment scheduling online, so you can go right to the website and schedule an appointment right straight through there. It knows what my calendar is, and that works well. I'm finding that people who are in their 20s, 30s, and 40s would rather do it that way. If you are in your 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, or 90s, you tend to want to do it the old-fashioned way, which is call me on the phone and schedule an appointment that way. Either way works fine as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
That's a kind of a nice situation. But wanted to talk today about, you know, unless we get calls coming in, I'll answer anything that's out there. But I have been talking to a lot of people as the economy has been heating up in getting small businesses put together. And actually, we found that we did a whole wave of a lot of small businesses when the economy started going down as well, because all of those folks that lost their jobs said, well, you know what, I'm going to start following that dream that I had. But now that the real estate market is starting to pick up again and the economy is starting to pick up and there's more money out there, people are starting to start small businesses. They're starting to do more things that are out there. And I thought I'd talk to people about some of the things they need to be concerned about when they're doing that. Most people think, well, I'll go out and I'll get a name and I'll put my, you know, open up my storefront or do something from my house. And that may work initially when you're doing a little bit here and there. But as you start being out there in the public, you really start needing to think about a couple of different things. One of them is organization, you know, how your business is structured, especially if you're going to be working with somebody else. If you're a single owner, things are a whole lot simpler. Once you add somebody in, it gets that much more complicated, and each additional person you add in on the business exponentially complicates things. And we'll talk about that in a little bit as well. But one is organization, and the other is liability protection. I was talking to somebody the other day about the first time I learned about owning a business or owning a corporation, and that the business could be liable for what went on, but the owners of the business not necessarily liable for that. There is a veil of protection called the corporate veil. I remember I was a sophomore in high school when I learned it, and I thought it was one of the most magical things I had ever heard of at the time. And for those people who don't understand, you can own a business, and if the business is a corporation or a limited liability company, the individual owners of that business are not responsible for the liability of the business. But it looks like we got a call coming in.
Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Good morning. I know he's not an economist, but he's an attorney. And this new tax of Obamacare tax of whatever the percentage is, like on a $10,000 profit, there's $266 more tax that we're going to have to pay. I'd like to have him explain how we can get that changed, if possible, through our legislature. What is the procedure?
The process, I'm talking about the legislative process. You're right, I'm not an economist, so I'm not able to speak on what effect that might have or how that may affect individual businesses. But the process for changing the law is the same as the process for putting the law in place. And so essentially what has to happen is there has to be a bill in the House of Representatives. That bill has to pass both the House and the Senate, and it has to then be signed by the president. I doubt you are going to get President Obama to sign a bill that will repeal Obamacare. I just don't see that happening. So he would veto it. If they were able, the House has tried many times. I don't know how many dozens and dozens of votes the House has had to repeal Obamacare, because the House is controlled by the Republicans. But the Senate is controlled by the Democrats, and the Democrats are not interested in repealing Obamacare.
Right.
So whatever's happening in the House is not going to make it through the Senate. But say things turned around and in 2014, The Republicans got control of both the House and the Senate. Could it be repealed at that point? Well, yeah, that's a step easier to do that, because they'd have to pass it. They could pass it then in both the House and the Senate. It could still be vetoed by Obama, but they could override the veto.
Right.
And that's a possibility. But again, you've got to get such a large majority of both the House and Senate to do that, that it's very unlikely that that's going to happen as long as there is a Democrat in the White House. So the only way that you're going to look at doing that is by getting a Republican in the White House. That's not going to be until 2016 or later. And it'll be interesting. That's one of the things I've been watching with this is there's been a lot of talk about what Obamacare is going to do. There's been a lot of talk about what effect it's going to have on the economy and what effect it's going to have on businesses. But up until now, that's all been speculation. And we haven't had a chance to see what the real effects are. I tend to be an optimist, so I'm hoping that it doesn't have all of the horrible effects that people are saying that it has. I'm hoping that we see some positive things out of it. And by 2016, we're going to have a whole lot better idea of that. And then people will have to make up their minds at that point. Is it something that we need to get rid of? Is it something that we need to adjust? Is it something that we need to stick with? My guess is it would probably be something that's going to be adjusted over time. We're constantly adjusting the rules that are out there.
Yeah, it'll be tweaked, but it won't be.
If I had put money on it, that's what I would bet, is that we would see a tweak rather than a complete change, a complete removal of it. And I did hear one commentator saying something that I tend to agree with, which is once you give something to people, it's really hard to take it away from them. It's going to be difficult, I think, if people start seeing that, I actually do get medical coverage, that it's going to be difficult to take that away from them, regardless of what the cost is. And Washington has not seemed that concerned about paying for things that they think that they ought to have. Which is really too bad. I know I have to run my household on a budget. I wish that the government would do the same thing, but I'm not planning on running for office at any time soon, so I can say those kinds of things and not have to worry about the retribution of it. So long-winded answer of essentially, I don't know how that's going to turn out, but the legislative process is difficult, but our process and our system is set up to make that difficult.
Right.
It is not easy to change things, and that is by design. It's not fast, it's not easy, and that is the way that the Founding Fathers set it up, and it seems to work pretty well. You know, I don't know whose quote this is or whose statement this is, and I'm sure I'm paraphrasing it, but our democracy is the worst system in the world, except for all of the other systems that are out there.
Yeah, right,
so,
right.
Terrible process.
Yeah, indeed. All right, let's continue with the business.
We can do that. We were talking about two things. One is organization. The other is liability protection. And I was talking a little bit about, what does that mean that a business has liability, or the owners of a business have a liability protection and a shield of liability? Well, think, for instance, if you own stock. Say, Juke, you own stock in Coca-Cola. And you've got 10 shares of Coca-Cola stock. You've had it for years. And Coca-Cola gets sued. Are you worried you're going to lose your house because Coca-Cola is getting sued? Well, of course you're not. Because people just kind of naturally understand that if I own shares in a company that company gets sued, they're not going to be coming after me personally. Now, my stock may lose value, so I may lose money that way, but they're not ever going to be able to get anything more than my stock. And that same theory works all the way down to very small businesses. So if you've got, Joe's Auto Repair on the street, down the street, and Joe's Auto Repair is set up as a corporation or a limited liability company, and Joe owns all of the stock or all of the membership interest in Joe's Auto Repair, and Joe's Auto Repair gets sued, well, they may be able to get all of the assets of Joe's Auto Repair. They may be able to get the building. They may be able to get the tools. They may be able to get whatever he owns within the business, but they can't get Joe's house, and they can't get Joe's retirement fund, and they can't get Joe's car, all of those things that are not owned by the business. And that's a real advantage for small business owners to be able to go out there and take a risk and say, I'm going to go out and do this business. I'm going to put a certain amount of my assets out there, but I also know I've got some protection from liability that's generated by my business. And that works for almost every business except for, and people are going to love this, lawyers and accountants and doctors. If you've been to your doctor's office and you know that it's Dr. Smith and Dr. Jones PC, that stands for professional corporation. That means they've set themselves up as a corporation, but it's a special kind of corporation only for professionals, where they've got the organization, but they don't have the liability protection. We as professionals are not able to shield ourselves from liability that we create by operating or running our professions. So what does that mean for me? Well, I actually have two different companies. I have Central Park Law, PLLC, which is a professional limited liability company, which is my law practice. And I have Central Park Ventures that owns my building. Well, why do I do that? Well, I want, if somebody slips and falls on the ice out there, right, on a bad day, I don't want to get sued. I don't want to lose my shirt for that. So I'm able to protect myself from those things.
And we have a call coming in. Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Hi. I have a question, and I'm not sure you can answer it, but it's a little along the lines of what you're talking about.
Sure.
I have a friend who was denied disability from her job.
Mm-hmm.
But her back to work doctor, you know, the MediCenter doctor,
mm-hmm,
won't allow her to go back to work. And so she's stuck in limbo. She can't go back, and she has no job, and she has no disability. So what she does have is 401k.
Okay.
And so she's been taking that out and spending it to live,
mm-hmm,
just to pay her bills, because she has to have the money and for her house payment and so forth. And I'm told she can't get any help from any social services because she has that money. Is that true?
That may be true. My advice to her is to talk to an attorney who specializes in disability claims and disability law. I don't, so I can't answer questions in terms of what the exact process is that she needs to do, but I'm sure that there is a review process for that.
Well, there's an appeal process, and she did hire a lawyer for that, but she now has another 160 days before he decides to file it, and there's no guarantee whatsoever she'll owe him one-third of her back pay plus all his costs,
mm-hmm,
whether or not she wins.
Yep.
She'll still owe the cost.
Yeah, and that's the way a lot of those cases are handled, is similar to the way personal injury cases are handled, where the attorney says, I'll take a risk. I'll risk my time on this.
But he's not risking his time, because she's paying for his time whether they lose or win.
Well, she's paying for costs, but not necessarily for the legal fees associated with it. It sounds like that's what the relationship is, and that's the way the relationship works,
okay,
with personal injury cases. And the reason why the costs, that the client still has to pay for the costs, is that the law does not allow attorneys to pay for those costs. The lawyer can advance those costs, but ultimately it is the responsibility of the client, and the law won't allow us to do that. And the reason why the law doesn't allow us to do that is they don't want lawyers being funding lawsuits. They don't want us to be the instigators of those lawsuits. They want the client to be the one who's got a little bit of skin in the game anyway. But the other issue that she talked about is that she's not able to get access to the social services because she has those assets. That's very, very likely the case. Those are usually need-based services.
Right.
And
so
if she's got those assets,
in a case like that, because that is not money that's supposed to be spent.
Exactly.
Willy-nilly. That's money for her future. We don't know if there'll even be Social Security when she is of the age to get it.
Well, and that's why it's important. It's smart that she saved when she did. And you're right, you don't want to use that as a rainy day fund, but when it's the only fund that you have and it's raining, that's what you end up using. Hopefully that the case that she's got in regard to the disability will end up in her favor, and then she'll be able to get that back pay. You know, she'll lose a third of that in that process with the attorney, but at least she'll have gotten something out of it. Yeah, plus the cost. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah, I wish her well. There's doesn't sound like there's much more that she can do than what she's doing right now.
She does not know what to do. She's stuck in the middle.
Yeah, the only other advice is to make sure that she is happy with and comfortable with the progress that the attorney is making, because just because she has an attorney doesn't mean she needs to stay with that same one. That she could always, you know, if she thinks that her needs are not being met by that attorney, she should be looking for another
one. Money, right?
Well, she may. It depends on, you know, whether the attorney was doing what he should have been doing or not. It's very hard to answer those kinds of things without all of the facts and what's going on. But the best I can tell you is she needs to be paying attention the same as you do with your doctor, with your accountant, with anybody else. You know, you don't just turn it over to them. You want to make sure that you're following up and making sure that things are being done the right way.
Oh, well, he's been very very abrupt, not answering questions, and
she may want to talk to another attorney.
Yeah.
She may want to. All right.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody's got problems.
They do. They do. Well, that's my whole job is based on that.
That's right.
If everybody did everything they were supposed to do when they were supposed to do it, I wouldn't have any work to do.
But small businesses can often get into deep water.
They can. They can. And one of the nice things about setting yourself up as a corporation or a limited liability company is it can lessen the impact on the individual. Now, does that mean that you can go out and you can set up a business and run up a bunch of bills? You know, and I've heard ads on the radio for this. Hey, we can get you, you know, set up an LLC and we can get you $10,000 or $50,000 worth of credit in the name of the limited liability company. And if the company fails, you don't ever have to pay that money back because it's the LLC that owed the money. I'm very skeptical about those. Because I set up a lot of limited liability companies for people, and they say, well, I'm going to go to the bank and get a loan. Can I get the loan in the name of the limited liability company? I say, well, yeah, you probably can. But the bank's not dumb. The bank knows that if the business fails, the limited liability company is no longer there, they're not going to get paid.
Right.
So the bank is going to make you, as the individual, sign a personal guarantee on that loan. The bank knows that they might not get paid if it's just the LLC. So they'll be happy to put the LLC's name on the loan, but they're going to want you as an individual, as a co-signer, so if the business fails, they're still coming after you. So most small businesses have a difficult time getting credit just in the name of the business. Established businesses don't have much difficulty with that. But the real advantage to folks with the liability protection is for those unexpected kinds of liabilities that are out there, that somebody slips and falls in my parking lot or walking up the steps into my office, and I get sued for that, and the lawsuit is greater than my insurance is, I don't want to lose my house because somebody did that. That would be too great of a risk for me to take to even open the business in that instance. And that also brings up another issue, which is, well, okay, I've got this limited liability company. I don't need to have insurance then, do I? Because, gee, if they sue me, they can just take whatever the business has, and I'll just make sure the business doesn't have a lot of assets in it. And the law has said very clearly, no, you can't do that. You still, even as a business, you need to be a responsible citizen. And you need to have a reasonable amount of insurance to deal with those expected liabilities that are out there. The LLC is really there to protect for those unexpected kinds of things, those ones that are over the limits, to be able to protect you from those kinds of things. And they work very well for that. So the liability piece is one piece of why you would put that together. The other one has to do with organization. What it does is it defines the relationship between the people that are going into business together. I was writing a blog post this morning on this, and I was comparing it to a marriage, that there are different stages in the life of every relationship, both in terms of a relationship between two people in a personal relationship and a business relationship. You know, there's that courtship period where you're just getting to know one another and you've got this great idea and you think, oh, this is going to be wonderful and let's move forward on it, and everything looks great and everything's rosy, and then and you should be doing some planning during that courtship period and getting to know the other person, deciding whether you really want to go into business with them. And then if you decide that you want to do that, then there's the engagement. You know, then you said, okay, we're going to make a commitment to one another. We're not going to get married for a little bit down the line. And smart people, and my mother was a smart person, and said, you know, you shouldn't get married right away after you get engaged. Make sure you're engaged for a while. And so you can do the planning that needs to be done. And in every good engagement, there ought to be premarital counseling. And the premarital counselor in a business engagement situation is the lawyer, where I sit down with clients and they come in with this great idea and these great dreams, and everybody likes each other and everybody's got the same goal and the same plans and we're all on the same page. And I pull out my wet blanket and throw it over to all of the people and I say, okay, yes, that may be the case, but do you really know what it is that you're getting into? And let's talk about what everybody's expectations are with this and how everybody's going to be dealing with this situation. And what if this happens? And what if that happens? And so every good engagement involves that premarital counseling. And every marriage that takes place when people may have competing interests ought to have a prenuptial agreement. Now, am I a fan of a prenuptial agreement for a young couple in their 20s, first marriage, don't have kids, you know, just doing the traditional marriage situation that you used to see on Father Knows Best? No, I think that's the most unromantic thing in the world, and that those two people ought to have the same interests in place. But in a second marriage situation, or in a situation where one party is coming in with children and the other one doesn't have children, they're not the children of both of them, well, now they've got interests that are not exactly the same. And in those instances, it makes all the sense in the world to say, hey, what are our individual responsibilities here? What are our responsibilities to each other? What are our responsibilities to these children? And so in those instances, a premarital agreement makes sense. And in every business relationship, a premarital agreement makes sense. And that is, for a limited liability company, the operating agreement. And for a corporation, that is what are called the bylaws. And most small businesses, when they're starting out, want to gloss over that piece. And I have to almost twist their arms to say, you need to do this, and you need to talk about these things. Because even though you think everything is going to go really well, and you all get along really well, and gee, you're making decisions together wonderfully now, that may not be the case in the future. You may get into this marriage, which is the next stage. You know, now we're operating the business, and now we're running the business. You're going to get into the situation of deciding who takes out the garbage. You know, whose responsibility is that? Who does the dishes? When we're going to be disciplining the children, how do we deal with that? Who pays the bills, not only in terms of who writes the check, but where does the money come from, and how are we going to spend the money? All of those decisions are made in a business as well, and unless you've defined who the decision makers are in that and who has final say in those things, you've got a real problem. A lot of people like to set up a business as a 50-50 deal. I own half, you know, he owns half. That's easy. And I said, well, you're going to end up with a whole lot of stalemate situations if you guys disagree with one another. And so we need to make those decisions as well. And then we also need to plan for the breakup. You know, it's a lot, 50% of divorces, yeah, or 50% of marriages end in divorce. We need to plan for that situation where maybe one person wants to get out. Well, why do they want to get out? Well, they saw greener pastures somewhere else, or they're no longer interested in being in this relationship, or they can no longer be in the relationship because they've got some kind of disability that keeps them from working. We need to plan for those things. And then we also need to plan for, you know, even if this relationship continues on, you know, quote unquote forever, eventually somebody's going to die. And that can be a problem, not only obviously for the person who passed away, but for the family of the person who passed away. Right. How do we deal with that? I've dealt with a lot of widows of small business owners who say, well, yeah, he worked his entire life. He was building this up. This was his dream. This was his life's work. And now he passes away, and I talk to his partners in the business, and I say, well, without him here, there's not really any value in the business, and there isn't anything that we can pay you for what he owned of the business. Yes, he owned a third of the business, but that's not really worth anything without him here. Or maybe a little better, but still a bad situation, we don't have the money to pay you. You know, yes, the business is worth $1 million, but we don't have, you know, $300,000 to pay you in that, to pay you off. And so the widow is often sitting in a situation where they don't know what to do in for that. The other problem is for the business. You know, now the two remaining partners in that business are partners with the widow. They don't want to be partners with the widow. They wanted to be partners with their partner.
Right.
Or worse yet, now they're partners with the kids. Nobody wants to be partners with the kids of their business partner. And so we need to plan for those eventualities as well. What does all of this mean? Every good relationship, every good business takes planning. There are lots of advantages to it, but you got to do it right. And that's where a good attorney comes in to be able to help guide through that, the same way that a good minister will do the premarital counseling as well.
Let's take a moment out for some weather here. The weather is brought to you by the Wooden Shoe Restaurant. The new winter feature, pineapple upside down pancakes. And the weather, afternoon rain showers with a high of 36. Steady rain tonight with a low in the mid-30s. And tomorrow, a few afternoon snow showers, a high of 41. Sunday, mostly cloudy and a high of 36. And right now, we're looking at 30 degrees here in the Tulip City. Our guest is Attorney Nathan Box this morning. And if you have a question, we still have time to take a question. 395-1450, line is open. And, yes, there's so many things to look at and say, well, what if this happens? What if this happens? What if this happens?
That's my job. I ask people come to me for answers, and actually my license plate, if you've ever seen my truck, my license plate says answers on it. and people ask me, why do I have that? And I say, well, that's what pays for the truck, is I give people answers and I charge the money for that. But I find I oftentimes ask more questions than I give answers to. Especially in these kinds of situations, I force people to look at those scenarios. Now, does everybody take my advice? No. Do they set up businesses and not fully think through the operating agreement or the bylaws and how all of these things are going to happen? No, that happens all the time. And I've had multiple circumstances where I've given them this counseling, I've given them this advice, I've twisted their arms, and they've gone on and said, you know what, we'll get to that. We got to get this business off the ground before we can talk about that. And a few years later, they come back in, and they don't like each other anymore. And they're thinking about dissolving, and I have been told more than once, we really wish we had listened to you at the beginning of this process. I even have one situation I think about often where I explained this to them in the beginning. Three people got together, started this business. They had a falling out with one of them and said to me, we wish we would had done that talking when the three of us got together. But now there are two of us, and so we're going to continue on with the two of us. And I say, well, okay, we need to define that stuff now. And they say, yeah, we'll get to that. We need to get through this transition phase. And then a few years later, those two don't like each other anymore. And they come back a third time and say, we really wish we'd listened to you. I said, I wish that you had as well, because it would be a whole lot easier at this stage.
And cheaper, very likely.
And definitely cheaper. Definitely cheaper.
Yeah.
Well, and we were talking before we went on the air. I wear another hat. I'm not just an attorney in Holland, but I'm the chair of the Tulip Time Board.
Yes.
And you'd ask me how Tulip Time was going.
Yes.
And we've got a big meeting this afternoon to do some strategic planning. But I'll tell you, ticket sales could not be any better than they have been. They've been absolutely spectacular. I haven't seen numbers since before Christmas, but the last I knew, there were only a few hundred tickets to Bill Cosby left, almost sold out, and ticket sales were, again, strong through the holidays. So if you are still thinking about going to Bill Cosby, you had better get in touch with the Tulip Time office right away, or you're going to miss out on it. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. There are additional shows that are going to be wonderful. We've got a great lineup of entertainment this year. I have just been informed that the weather is going to be absolutely perfect, and the tulips are going to be spectacular.
You looked at the Farmer's Almanac.
The Farmer's Almanac has said it's going to be a perfect spring and a perfect tulip time week. We're doing the bike races again this year at the beginning of the festival. It's no longer the Queen's Day criterium; it's the King's Day criterium.
Oh, yes.
Which, if you didn't get a chance to see that last year, it's spectacular. They race through downtown Holland on that Sunday afternoon. They close down the streets, and people are amazed at how fast those bicycles can zip down 8th Street and around that course. And again, we've got the parades and the carnivals, and we're lining up all of the other activities that are going to be going on. It's going to be a wonderful year this year.
And we're out of time. Thanks so much, Nathan, for being our guest this morning here on Talk of the Town.
It was a pleasure, as always.